Pitch hit on the ground to short. Circling in the glove at McCoy. A throw to first. Lowell skips it by Cooper. Up and in to score on another error. To second base goes Zobrist. And the Rays get an unearned run to be sure. And this inning continues. The Blue Jays lead cut to 2-1.
That was Jay's second error of the first inning. And that was a microcosm of this ballgame as Jay's kick it away. So there's your play of the game brought to you by Rogers On Demand. Watch Jays live from anywhere online or on the go at rogersondemand.com. The next hitter, Johnny Damon, would hit a fly ball to shallow center field. Kelly Johnson camped under it. Colby Rasmus camped under it. Neither of them made any sort of move to catch the ball, though, which is kind of an issue. It drops for an RBI double. The Rays tie it up right there. Zobrist takes Romero deep in the fourth. And then Tampa scores three more unearned runs in the eighth to win at 6-2. The Blue Jays got four hits after the first inning. I'm Mike Wilner. This is Jays Talk. The phone lines are open. Taking your calls to the bottom of the hour at 416-870-0590. Star 590 on the cell. Long distance 1-888-666-0590. The Rays pick up a full game on the Red Sox for the American League wildcard. Boston lost 9-1 to the Yankees. So the Sox are now game and a half up. And three up on the Angels, who are leading the A's 1-0 through three in Anaheim. Elsewhere, the Baltimore Orioles beat the Tigers 6-5. Matt Engel with his first major league home run, and then he won it with a squeeze in the ninth. Justin Verlander wasn't around, though, so he doesn't get the loss. But the Tigers' loss, coupled with a 7-3 Texas win over Seattle, means the Rangers now lead the Tigers by a game for that second seed and avoidance of the New York Yankees in the first round of the American League, assuming the wild card comes out of the AL East, which it probably will. Over in the National League, Washington beat Atlanta 4-1, while St. Louis took down Chicago 2-1 with two in the bottom of the ninth, scoring the winning run on a wild pitch. So the Cards are now just two games back of Atlanta for the wild card. The Diamondbacks lead the Giants 6-1 in the bottom of the fifth inning. Unless San Francisco can come back and win that, the Giants will be eliminated from wildcard consideration. If Arizona wins that game, that would give them 92. Milwaukee's leading Florida 6-4 in the bottom of the eighth, so that would give the Brewers 93 in the race to not play the Phillies in the first round. Though now, everybody might want to play the Phillies. They're trailing 6-3 to the Mets in the top of the ninth. If they lose the game, they get swept in the doubleheader, and that will be eight straight losses for the Phillies, who continue to have the best record in Major League Baseball. This is the Jays Talk, 416-870-0590, star 590 on the cell, long distance, 1-888-666-0590. As you can hear, the pipes are not at their best, so I need your help. Let's go to the phones. We start with Don in Las Vegas. Hello, Don.
Hey, Mike, I hope you are not unwell this evening.
Well, I'm trying. Thanks. Go ahead.
Well, I just want to talk about the first inning there. And in Coop's defense, there are no domes in the PCL. So I think, you know, he had that going for him. But I morally object to the fact that that is considered an error. And I think that that's wrong. It is the only place in the rule book where you'll find an error that does not result in the potential advancement of a base runner. All it does is change the cap from a ball to, or from a change the count to a ball. And I just think that that's, I don't think that should be considered an error. And I think that everything that happened after that is not a case of opening the floodgates. I think that that's X does not equal Y and Z.
Should that ball have been caught?
It's not inside the lines, so it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. Why does it not matter whether or not it's inside the lines? It's in play. The out should have been made. That's an out.
Compare that. Okay, fair enough. Compare that to a double play that's not turned, that is not called an error, where that does result in a base runner on base that should not be on base. And that's not considered an error.
I'm not going to argue. Don, hold on. I have to have a conversation here, all right? Not monologue.
Sorry, Matt. Sorry. I'm a little riled up.
I don't disagree with you on the double play thing. I think you should be allowed to assume a double play when it's patently obvious that you would have had a double play. But I don't see how that compares to the foul ball dropped at all.
Well, I think it's what result it has on the game.
The result it has in the game is that the hitter's not out when he should be out. That's an error.
But all it does is change the count.
Doesn't matter. He should be out. It should have been an out.
How then would you score a catcher who drops a third strike, but then throws the runner out? Dropping the third strike's an error.
No, it's not.
He should have caught it, and the batter should be out.
If the out is recorded anyway, then the out is recorded anyway. It's just the same thing as if there's a ground ball to shortstop, and he bobbles it, and he kicks it, and he throws to first, and he still gets the out. When we talk at the same time, Don, nobody can understand either one of us.
Okay, yeah, I apologize. If he throws the guy out at first base, it's the throw. It's that part of the play that makes the out.
Doesn't matter. Same batter's out anyway.
Right. And my point on this one is, the batter, the drop of the ball, only changes the count. The next pitch could get the hitter out.
Sure. And if the next pitch gets the hitter out, then the hitter's out. But if the fielder catches the ball, he's out. And the bat is over and a new guy comes up. That's an error. Honestly, it baffles me how you can think that's not an error.
Because of the double play situation, which happens in between the lines. Where two runners could be out, a runner has ended up on base, potentially in scoring position.
But one has nothing to do with the other. One is just an antiquated old, you can't assume a double play because you never know what's going to happen. Before there was any, like, before you could look at a replay or before you could look at whatever. This is a case where if a play is made, an out is made, and that's it. Catch a pop-up. What does it matter whether it's 3 feet to the right of where it was?
But isn't a play defined by the rule books as happening in between the lines?
No. Then how is anybody ever out on a pop-up that's caught in foul territory?
Well, that has been a question of mine for a long time.
There you go.
It reminds me of the Bartman play.
What about the Bartman play?
Oh, sorry. It just reminds me of that Bartman play, you know, that everyone says open the floodgates.
Oh, please.
X equals Y and Z, you know, and... I think that that's just a misnomer. I think that you can't look at one play and then say all these other plays resulted because of that play.
Well, you can say that the B.J. Upton single resulted as a result of David Cooper dropping that foul ball. I think it's painfully obvious.
I don't think so because we still had another pitch to make. We had a chance to
yeah,
make
but he
pitch,
was out.
That pitch could have resulted in no.
But he was out. If the play's
not
made, the guy's out. So what? You still haven't told me why between the lines matter.
Because it changes the count. It does not result in a runner on base that should not be on base. That's my argument.
It results in an out not made that should have been made. Otherwise, everything in foul territory doesn't count, right? Like you just let every foul ball drop because it doesn't change anything.
And it doesn't count when a catcher drops a foul ball.
Of course it does.
No, it doesn't count as an error.
Yes, it does.
It's a pass ball.
No. When a catcher drops a foul pop-up, it's an error.
If he drops the ball on a third strike,
yes,
that's not an error unless he doesn't make the throw to first base.
Okay, that's not a foul pop-up.
No,
if a catcher drops the third strike, yes, it is a pass ball or a wild pitch. Either way, if it's a pass ball...
Until he completes the play.
Well, no. No calls made. We're going in too many circles here, Don. I appreciate the call. No calls made until a play is complete. But no. If you drop a ball, it's an error. Period. B.J. Upton should have been out. There's no argument against the fact that B.J. Upton should have been out. Sure, they could still have gotten him out afterwards. But should have been out because David Cooper should have caught that ball. And Colby Rasmus should have caught another ball. And Mike McCoy shouldn't have thrown the ball away. Bill in Brampton. Hello, Bill.
Hi, Mike. Well, you wasted a lot of breath, and a caller doesn't know what he's talking about.
Well, he's sticking to his guns, but I think he's misguided.
I think he should go watch hockey or football. He's obviously watch very little baseball.
There's no need to be like that.
Kelly Johnson, when he tried to steal second there, when Baptiste was on third and Edmund was up with one out, do you think that was a feral call that he did in his own? Like, that didn't make any sense to me.
When are you going to learn that there's no P in Bautista?
Yeah, I understand.
You're killing me.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, if you can get it. I mean, what doesn't make any sense to me is Kelly Johnson's continued insistence on sliding into second base with his lead foot in the air or moving his lead foot past second and trying to hook the bag with his back leg. I don't get that at all. And he's done it a couple of times now, And, you know, the whole point of getting to a base is that when the first part of your body gets there, you touch the base with it. And that's what he's not doing. That's what hurts me. I don't believe that the simple act of stealing second base with Jose Bautista at the plate necessarily means that Bautista will then immediately get intentionally walked.
No, but he was on third, right? The player I'm referring to is when Bautista was on third.
Thank you.
And Kelly Johnson was on first.
Yes, yeah, right. And Edwin was at the plate.
Right. He had a 2-1 count.
Yep.
Like it just seemed like we had maybe a big inning building. And even to get caught stealing second, it took us out of, you know, where a fly ball would score a run or a ground ball would score a run. I mean,
ground ball might have been a double play if he doesn't
possibly,
go.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose so. But okay with that, with him trying to steal second on that situation?
Sure, if you think you can get it. Well, so when's a good situation to steal a base in your mind?
I don't really like stealing a base when a guy's on third and there's less than two out, basically. I just think you're risking. I mean, you know, you can get the guy home from third on a fly ball. I guess many different ways to get him home. Once if you get caught stealing, go to two, then you've sort of taken a lot of different ways of scoring the runner, right?
Yeah, I see what you mean. But yeah. I think that, you know, first of all, you're not going to go unless you think you can get it, right?
Right.
And he was wrong because he didn't get it. If the situation arises where you think you can get a base, take the base.
One other question.
Yeah.
Cooper at first base, he looks a little lost out there, or is that just my imagination? I mean, just watching him at first base,
Tonight. He was bad tonight. Okay. He was bad tonight. He dropped a pop-up. He couldn't come up with the mid-range hop on the throw from McCoy, which I don't really blame him for. He made a terrible throw when they had B.J. Upton picked off in the eighth inning. He was bad tonight.
Bad throw to the pitcher there a couple of games ago.
He was bad. Yeah, he made that play last night as well. Kind of got caught in between.
Sort of one little nubber that, I don't know if it was his fault, maybe it was the pitcher's fault.
That was yesterday.
Was that his fault? Maybe that was the pitcher's fault. I'm not quite sure. He just looks a little tentative out there. I don't know.
Well, he hasn't played 20 games in the big leagues yet. So I think he's a capable defensive first baseman, but he certainly did not show that tonight. All right, thanks, Bill. Appreciate the call. The phone lines are open, 416-870-0590, *590 on the cell, long distance 1-888-666-0590. There are four games left in the Blue Jays season. They are 80-78. And yes, it's Saturday night. But it's preseason hockey. It really doesn't mean anything. Tim is in Thorold. Hello, Tim.
Hey, Mike. How are you? We've talked a few times. We both feel like crap tonight, too.
I'm sorry you do, too. It's no fun.
Yeah, but I had to make this call tonight because when St. Louis made this deal with Toronto to move Colby Rasmus over to our organization,
yep.
I kind of had to look deeper into it and say, why are they moving such a talented young kid? Now, as I sit back and watch him, I'm 36 years old. I've been watching the Jays since 84. You always get these players that come around every now and then that everyone says, hey, you got to watch this kid play outfield because when he's out there, it doesn't even look like he's trying because
yep.
he's so good. Well, guess what? Now it's starting to look like the kid's not even trying.
Oh, I don't know about that.
There's just some, he just doesn't have it. Like, it's just like he's, like, if you take a player like
3 days ago, he made one of the best catches I've ever seen a center fielder make.
Yeah, okay. There's no doubt. I mean, I've played slow pitch for many years.
That doesn't count.
Oh, my
please,
God, to
please don't compare.
Old men making
yeah.
great catches. All
please,
I'm saying,
please don't compare. But
I'm
to
not,
say
not
he just doesn't
comparison.
Have it is categorically incorrect.
Do you understand where I'm going with this a bit, or you don't agree with me at all?
I don't know. To say that he just doesn't have it?
It's not that he doesn't have it.
You said
it
that, though.
It seems like there's something, there's no drive in the man. There's no go-to-war for your team in the man.
Yeah, just like Devon White. He plays center field exactly the same way Devon White did.
Okay.
You never saw Devo sprint. He was very nonchalant about everything he caught.
Okay.
But he never left his feet because he never had to.
Never had to. But I guess what my point is, and originally why I was calling, at the age of the kid and the way his career is going and heading, do you see any need for winter ball for this guy this year?
No.
No?
In fact, I think the opposite. I think he just needs to get away from it for a while.
And I thought that too as well. But then I start thinking this is an organization that was able to send Roy Halladay down to Class A to get his mechanics and everything straightened out. And I just think when I'm watching this kid play, like I've just there's something there that's not grabbing me. I guess we'll say.
Well, but you're far from the only one.
Pardon
but
me?
You're far from the only one.
I know.
But
and
Colby Rasmus.
I don't know if I'm not being fair to the kid.
You're not being fair. To him. You're not. But you're not alone.
But
so I mean, you're
kind
of going with the crowd.
Everybody
needs
you.
A whipping boy. Last year it was Lyle Overbay. First half of this year it was Aaron Hill. Aaron Hill's gone. Now it's Colby Rasmus. That's the way it works. And I understand that he doesn't look like. And he hit into a double play with the bases loaded last week. And people were ripping him for not running hard down the line without realizing that he got thrown out at first by less than half a step. You cannot not bust it down the line and be thrown out by less than half a step. It doesn't look like he's going hard. It didn't look like Devo was going hard. It didn't look like Mario Lemieux was going hard. There are some guys who just have the long strides and they eat up ground, and that's the way it works.
Okay.
He's never going to be a guy who smiles a lot. He's never going to be a guy who's extroverted. That's just the way he is. But he has all the tools to be a sensational baseball player.
I agree. Well, is there any who on this roster is heading to winter ball? Lowen going to be heading down to winter ball?
I don't know, actually. You know what?
I
don't know.
Get the at-bats in. I think it's probably a good idea. But other than that, I just wanted to get your opinion on it. I respect your opinion. And like I said, if I'm being hard on him, you're the guy who's going to help me see things differently.
Well, I appreciate it. I think everyone's being hard on Colby Rasmus. And it's, you know what's funny? It's all about first impressions. And his first impression was not good. And he's hitting 190 right now, or less than 190 since he joined the Blue Jays. First impressions are no good. But, you know, when your first impression is good, like, say, Eric Thames, then you can go 1-for-34 and everyone will still love you. Colin is in Victoria. Hello, Colin.
Hi, Mike. It's a privilege to be on your show.
It is not a privilege at all. It's my honor to have you.
I just want to say I really appreciate your rational thought and statistical references when answering questions and giving your opinion. I very much agree in the importance of patience when building a successful club, and I'm more than thrilled with everything Anthopoulos has done this season and where the Blue Jays have gotten thus far.
It's pretty amazing when you look at it that this team is over 500, having gone through everything that it's gone through this year. And
for
the
sure,
changes
yeah.
and remaking the roster and everyone who has failed, it's a pretty amazing thing, and it's a shame that more people aren't excited about that.
It is, for sure. And I just have one question for you. I wanted to ask, in contrast to the Tampa Bay Rays rebuilding process,
yep.
Taking, you know, a decade just to get 3 years of World Series contention, I wanted to ask, what are the major differences with the Blue Jays rebuilding process that will theoretically keep them in contention for much longer?
Well, there are two major differences. The first one is the Jays haven't had the opportunity to draft as high as the Rays have. So Tampa gets the head start that way because they drafted first or second for 10 straight years. But the flip side of that is that the Blue Jays will have the opportunity, one expects, to not have to have fire sales every year. To, you know, when the Jays, Carl Crawford and Carlos Pena and Joaquin Benoit and Rafael Soriano come up as free agents, the Jays will be able to retain them. The Jays won't have to trade Matt Garza in order to save money, and they won't have to trade James Shields, which the Rays will probably have to do after this year. That's the difference, is that the Blue Jays have the revenue streams to be able to retain the strong players that they develop.
Well, excellent. I appreciate that answer, Mike, and I agree. I think I agree with everything you just said. So let's just hope for another great season next year.
Well, that would be nice. Thank you, Colin. Appreciate it. And if the Jays take another step forward next season, even if they don't compete for a playoff spot, which it's a little difficult to expect them to do, though they certainly could, as long as they continue to move forward, this is a good thing. Guy in Toronto. Hello, Guy.
Hi, Mike. I was watching a bit of the Cubs-Cardinals game, actually, and they were talking about Rasmus, and they were referring to some article in one of the Toronto papers. I guess I missed it. Oh, did you hear about
that? In the National Post, yeah. John Lott wrote a really nice article about Colby Rasmus and kind of the ambiguity and the mystery that is Rasmus. You should check it out.
Yeah, well, these guys were shaking their heads. You could see them talking about Rasmus, and they couldn't believe some of the things that he said. But, yeah, I'll have to check that out. My question, actually, for you was about Brett Cecil. Do you not think he's probably better suited in the bullpen against, like, as a lefty specialist, seeing that he does have success against left-handed hitters, probably one of the best top five in the American League, as opposed to being in the starting rotation where, you know, he's kind of flunked out this year?
I don't think he's flunked out this year. I think he's had a very similar season to last year, and, you know, he's not getting the run support. In fact, his whip this year is better than it was last year. His ERA is only marginally worse than it was last year. But the Jays have scored something like 11 runs for him in his last 9 starts. He has been very, very good against left-handers, but he hasn't been that bad against righties. He's about league average on base-wise against right-handed batters. He's allowed a .331 on base, and I think league average is like .330 or .329 or something like that. I think almost the same about Brett Cecil now as I did after last season.
Well, I guess where I'm going with this is, I mean, I see Romero, I see Brendan Morrow, Henderson Alvarez, you know, basically with spots in the rotation. Casey Jansen, probably our best relief pitcher this season for sure. And other than that, I see a lot of holes in our lineup, and I don't know if they're going to be bringing in somebody, you know, in the offseason. I'm sure they're going to trade for somebody, maybe go after a Rich Harden or whatever. But, you know, I see a lot of holes in this pitching staff. And, you know, when I give the team a yearly analysis, I mean, besides, you know, Jose Bautista, you know, the catchers, and Unel, you know, what position players would you really give a passing grade to? I mean, we seem to have a lot of holes. You know, there's a lot. I don't want you to think that I'm...
What does any of that have to do with Brett Cecil?
Well, I'm just saying, like, throughout the whole team. I mean, it has nothing really to do with Brett Cecil. I'm just saying there's a lot of holes in this lineup, and I think, you know, Cecil would probably, you know, do we have a lefty in the bullpen? No. You know, I would he be better served in the bullpen? I think he would be. You know, I think it's a lot easier to get a starter than a solid closer, and I know you'll disagree with that, but...
Oh, for sure. But only because it's a fact.
Well,
that it's much easier to get a solid closer than to get a very good starter.
And one last question, Mike.
Yeah.
Do you think the Jays would go after one of the guys in Milwaukee in the offseason, one of the closers, seeing that they have two of them?
Axford and Rodriguez?
Yeah.
I don't. I mean, they might explore a trade for John Axford, depending on what it would cost. But I don't know that Milwaukee would be terribly inclined to give him up because, well, he's really good and under control for another 5 years. So it would take a lot to get him.
Well, Milwaukee or Oakland, those seem to be the two trading partners the Jays like to trade with.
I don't think that's true. but I no. And Francisco Rodriguez, no, he's going to cost a lot of money. And there's no point in throwing a whole big whack of money at a closer.
Okay, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. Yeah, Milwaukee does have two closers. That's for sure. But Rodriguez is going to be a free agent after this year. So they only have one closer. And he's going to be looking for big money. And good for him. And for my money, anyway, somebody else could give it to him. Roger's in Niagara. Hello, Roger.
Hi, Mike. I, too, appreciate your vast baseball knowledge.
Oh, that's swell of you to say.
I enjoy this time of the evening every night listening to you.
Thank you.
And I don't know what I'm going to do in the next couple of weeks to get my baseball fix.
Well, we still got at least a month.
Oh, yeah?
Sure, till the end of the World Series. At least a month.
Well, oh, yeah, but...
I'll be here every night.
But Jay's talk, though. That's what I want to hear.
We'll have playoff.
I don't want to hear you talking about St. Louis or Philadelphia.
So call me and ask about the Jays, and we'll talk Blue Jays.
All right. Anyway, the last, what you just said sort of stole my thunder a little bit there. I've heard you the last couple of days talking about, you know, and you're right, not throwing money away or just to spend that money because there's not that many free agents out there that are worth throwing that money at, and I agree with you wholeheartedly. But in your opinion, the way Alex likes to do things, like he'll pull the trigger on anything if he thinks it's going to help the team. Is there anybody out there you think might be available this winter that would fit the mold that we're trying to do, that he's trying to do with this team?
Yes.
That we could trade for?
Maybe.
And if so, who would you like to see?
Well,
Alex trade for? I know, obviously, it could be anybody, but I'm saying somebody that might be available, not some superstar. Like, obviously, there's tons of guys we'd love to have, but
at the risk of opening an avalanche, do you open avalanches? You start avalanches. The risk of starting an avalanche, there is a guy named Joseph Daniel Votto plies his trade for the Red Legs of Cincinnati.
But why would they trade him?
Well, I think they might dip their toe in the water. He didn't want to sign with them into his free agent years. They still have him for another couple of years, but they locked him up long term and tried to buy out some free agent years of his and couldn't. He's owed $26.5 million over the next 2 years. Mm-hmm. And they have a kid named Yonder Alonso who they like. And if they get the right package for Joey Votto, they might be inclined to give Yonder Alonso the first base job. He has come up this year and simply blown the doors off. And they have loved what they've seen of him. And in fact, the truth may be that the better Yonder Alonso hits this year, and again, he's doing a whale of a job, the easier it might be for them to part with Joey Votto. Alonso's hitting .333 right now with a .964 OPS in close to 100 at-bats. So it may make sense to them to kind of do what Arizona did with Justin Upton last year and dip their toes in the water and see what they could get back. And I have a feeling if that happens, Alex Anthopoulos is going to dirty shirt it up, and he'll be all over that.
All right. This superstar shortstop we have coming up.
This shortstop prospect that they have coming up. Yes.
I know you like Escobar.
Yep.
He's done very well since he's been here.
Yeah, he can hit, he can field, he does all kinds of good things.
So once this kid's ready, what are we going to do with Escobar?
Escobar's probably still going to play shortstop.
Can he play somewhere else?
No, I think that's one of those we'll jump off that bridge when we come to it situations.
Okay.
You don't know what you have right now in Adani Echevarria, but you do know that what you've got in Yunel Escobar is a top of the order, top flight defensive shortstop. And Echevarria is not going to be that. He's going to be an outstanding defensive shortstop who hits ninth. And maybe what you do is deal one of them. But really, that's something that maybe you treat Echevarria like your Brett Laurie and get Sean Markham for him. But he's got more value as a shortstop on the market than he would have as a second baseman with the Blue Jays, I think. Maybe not. We'll see what happens as time goes by. But that's kind of one of those things where you have to wait till Echevarria is fully cooked and then figure out what you do with him. Thanks for the call. Thanks to all the calls. Apologies to those of you to whom we could not get, but we must step away. Blue Jays lose it 6-2 to the Rays of Tampa Bay. Scoreboard next on the Blue Jays Radio Network. Back here at Baseball Control in Toronto, Blue Jays lose it 6-2 to the Rays. Tampa scoring 5 unearned runs in this game against Ricky Romero as a result of 3 Jays errors and another ball that wasn't called an error because nobody touched it. A pop-up by Johnny Damon to shallow center field that Kelly Johnson and Colby Rasmus both let just fall in. Quick look at the scoreboard here. Only one game still going in the American League. The Angels and A's are tied at 1 in the bottom of the 5th inning. If LA wins that game, they'll pick up a game on the wild card Red Sox and be 2.5 back. The Rays are 1.5 back. Boston lost 9-1 to the Yankees this afternoon. They'll play 2 in New York tomorrow. Rangers beat Seattle 7-3, while Baltimore took down Detroit 6-5. So the Rangers pick up a game on the Tigers in the battle for the second seed in the American League. White Sox over Kansas City 6-3. Indians take 2 from the Twins 8-2 and 7-6. Zach Putnam picked up his first major league win in the opener. Nick Hagedorn picked up his first major league win in the nightcap. Right now in the National League, the Diamondbacks lead the Giants 8-2 in the bottom of the sixth inning. Aaron Hill has scored a couple of runs. If Arizona wins this game, the Giants will be eliminated from any playoff contention. Rockies and Astros are tied 2-2 through 11. Padres lead the Dodgers 3-0. Washington beat Atlanta 4-1. St. Louis took down the Cubs 2-1. So the Braves lead over the Cardinals for the wild card is down to 2 games. Jays and Rays wrap the series up tomorrow afternoon. We're on at 1 o'clock Eastern for a 1:10 first pitch. Brett Cecil against Wade Davis. If you're listening on our flagship station, Sportsnet Radio, the Fan 590, you get the pre-pregame starting at 12:30. You've been listening to Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by Rogers, a proud partner of the Toronto Blue Jays. This copyrighted broadcast is presented by authority of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership. It may not be reproduced or retransmitted in any form, and the accounts and descriptions of this game may not be disseminated without the express written consent of Rogers Blue Jays Baseball Partnership and the Blue Jays Radio Network. Vote for Tom Cheek! For Jerry Howarth, Alan Ashby, Tom Young, Dylan Brown, and Faiso, I'm Mike Wilner. Good night.